Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tech Done Different. I'm your host, Ted Harrington, and with me today is our special guest, Dr. Wanda Toro Torrini, founder, full of energy, the founder of catchwords.com. Dr. Wanda, thank you so much for being here today.
Cool. I'm super psyched to be here. And yeah, it's like 4 p.m. right now and I don't run on coffee, but this is how I am normally. So I'll try and bring it down.
Why would you possibly want to bring it down?
Let's go all out. You don't want me to crank it up.
Full throttle. That's what we're doing here.
Cool.
Let's get right into it. And I want to start with a discussion that you and I had in advance of finding our time here together today. And it's an idea that I think impacts a lot of people who would listen to this show, where it's the idea of how do you adapt? How do you deal with the conditions that are thrown at you? And I think the simplest way to think about it, because you have a really cool story around this, is like, what happens when you set out to do X, but the market says, no, you're doing Y? And I think your professional story even is that exactly. So maybe we can talk about ecofiles and kind of your experience with this idea.
Well, first you flip tables and wine. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, you know, there may be some of that's involved. So I want to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, it really pisses us off, right? Like when we have a solution to something, when you're a visionary type personality, you typically have a solution for something that's way more advanced than people are willing to accept. I'm sure like your tech audience, it's either way advanced or it's just not jiving, you know, it's not on the same wavelength as the folks that you're trying to explain it to. And so that gets very frustrating. And you mentioned ecofiles. Yeah, I mean, 11 years ago, I started, actually it wasn't a company called ecofiles. I just kind of started this idea, this concept of ecofiles when I was at a very large medical conference. So I had started my company in 2005. I think of ideas, I started a lot of software options and consulting or whatever. So I just like, I'm an idea person, right? But I'm at this large medical conference, and at the end of the conference, Ted, there is this human climbable mountain of brochures that are being thrown out at the end of the conference. It was McCormick Place in Chicago. I don't know if you've ever been. It's like humongous, like Javits Center. So this was like a pretty impressive pilo paper. And I must admit, I'm not naturally like super crunchy, but I care about the earth, right? But I want to position that, you know, to the audience in the sense that it was disturbing enough to say, whoa, something needs to be done about this. This is in 2007. So anyway, I look at that and I say, wow, long story short, there's got to be an eco-friendly way to distribute this information, right? It's being thrown out. It's not eco-friendly. Attendees hate carrying these pieces of paper around anyway. Marketers don't have data on who picks up what pieces of information. If they have revisions, they have to reprint stuff. It's just a bad thing all the way around. So June of 2007, I call it ecofiles. I have no idea what it's going to be from a tech perspective. But as a marketer and a problem solver, I just know that that's what I want to do. So moving forward, we settled on texting because texting is ubiquitous. You know, whatever phone you have, you don't have to learn an application, download stuff or whatever. I'm super psyched about this. People can text and they immediately get the piece of information sent to their email as a text, an HTML email, and an attachment, right? Because an email with an attachment looks like it's way more important than just an email with a link. So I thought of all of this in advance, 2009, I'm like ready to help companies make be eco-friendly. And every single time I'm talking to companies about this, I'm literally spending half an hour talking about mobile marketing or texting stats, because they basically say that only children and teenagers text. And it was like crushing, because I'm like, are you kidding? Like, teenagers text their parents and parents are going to text their grandparents. Like, it's coming, like, be on the forefront. And I just couldn't get them past that. And I was crushed, because I knew that this was a problem that needed to be solved. I knew that this could easily do it. I spent a lot of time trying to make it super duper easy, and nothing. So I had to put it on the digital shelf. Like, I had to kind of just go on with life, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. Like, I was literally obsessed with the fact that this needed to be part of the world. And anybody who knew about it would literally call me up and be like, I just saw this. I saw this billboard and I just thought they should have a keyword on there, you know? Or I saw this TV advertisement or this show, like, they just said, hey, go to my website and get this, you know, XYZ, and they should have a keyword. And I'm like, yep. But anyway, I fast forward, I'm running a consulting division in my company. And as part of that, I'm speaking in front of live audiences. And it was for the pharmaceutical industry. So I had to like pay Mondo bucks to speak in front of these people. In fact, $10,000 for the opportunity to speak. So very unusual situation, but I knew that I needed to have a good ROI. And then I thought, well, I have eco files. Like, maybe I could just offer the audience the opportunity to text for my slides. Like, literally it was like, there, why not use a $200,000 solution, you know, like, of my own money that I put into creating this thing back then. And anyway, first time I use it, like 25% of my audience text for my slides.
Dope.
And I was like, wait a second, this is something. Not only for me, right? Because usually when I go to these conferences, maybe I would come out with 5 to 10 cards. You know how people give you cards, mm-hmm. and like, it might not really be because they're interested in you. It's just like, hey, here's my card. I need to get rid of them. But then with strategy and stuff, I wound up being able to get 76% of my audience texting every single time I taught in front of an audience. And I knew at that point, this was something to deliver to the world in a different way. And I call that catchwords. So it's like this journey of, I couldn't accept the fact that it wasn't going to be used the way I intended it to be used. I still can't accept it. Like, I feel like I will get back around to it. But in order to keep it viable, you kind of need to listen to what the market tells you, right? And this is what resonated.
Yeah, and you certainly, it's kind of funny. You set out to solve your problem A, and problem B presented itself without maybe even necessarily knowing it, and you jumped on that opportunity. And that's a really cool story. I mean, certainly a lot of people that listen to the show themselves maybe are getting in front of audiences, or at least are themselves in audiences and you know, experiencing content delivered from a stage these days, more virtually than in person, certainly. But it sounds like you've tapped into is this idea of engagement that, you know, the audience and the speaker, they're both in the room. They both want to have this relationship with each other. They want to learn, they want to, you know, obtain whatever benefit they're both there for. And you're trying to figure out a way, well, how can I facilitate that happening?
Yeah. And it's interesting, like, watching the dynamic. So when I first experienced this in a live setting and use it many years in an in-person setting, like right now, it's all of a sudden like, oh, and it helps digitally as well. But I had really focused on that live interaction because it was a non-digital interaction that had an opportunity. I had the opportunity to bridge it into a digital interaction, right? And at that point, then it would be measurable. Then you could do systematic follow-ups and all of that stuff, right? But that non-digital interaction of just speaking in front of an audience wasn't really measurable. But then from a human dynamics perspective, right? We've all been, if you've spoken, you've been in that situation where you could see like the twinkle in people's eyes, right? You could see people nodding and they're interested and you're like, woohoo, I'm going to have a lot of people come and talk to me at the end. And either nobody comes, a couple people come, or you get a chatty person like Wanda that talks you up, and then you have like a line of 10 people and you don't get to talk to them, right? So all these opportunities that are lost. But then to really nerd out, because I am Dr. Wanda, the nerdy girl entrepreneur, but there's a human psychology law called the law of diminishing intent, which is the longer that we wait to do something, the lower the probability it is that we're going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So inherently, like when we share our contact information in any of these situations, like email me or Instagram me or Facebook me or LinkedIn me or whatever, like people have the intention and then they don't follow up. So it was really exciting to use technology to try and bridge that gap. And people would get like psyched, like, yes, I want that piece of information. And it isn't like, oh, text me. Like there are services like Community, for example. If Community is just texting to a group of people and you text back and forth. It's that sort of thing. But this is actually texting for a piece of content because I come from an educational background, right? So that's really my focus about helping people offer an extension from their teaching experience and allow the audience to get more. But I loved the fact that tech was able to bridge it. But what I found out, actually you and your audience would be very interested in this, is that as you all know, like you need strategy to be able to wield the power of technology, right? So take my first interaction where at least I strategically chose to use EcoFiles to try and connect with my audience, right? And my first interaction got me 25% of my audience texting, right? But it was the strategy of like figuring out, well, so when is it that I integrate like that catchword? Like, how do I physically present it? Like, for those of you that can see, for our digital clients, we do these like backgrounds where it says, hey, text this to this. And mine says text leads to 411321, right? So we work really hard on figuring out all of those dynamics that help to increase the response rate so that people will get greater power, really truly experience what the technology can do. And I think that's really important when we're in the tech world to realize like we know the power, the capability of our technology, of a system, but we really need to work with our clients, internal or external, to make sure that they understand how to optimize it. And that's our responsibility. But I think we often feel frustrated,
right,
when people don't see it or use it right.
One of the things that jumps out to me about the story that you're telling here is something that for those of us who are in the security community are probably hearing out of this idea of assumptions, right? And
yeah,
I hear all the time people say things like, oh, no, an attacker wouldn't do that. And it's like, well, I just asked you about that, which means that I've thought of it, which means someone else has thought of it, which means they probably will do that.
Somebody quite maniacal is thinking that, and even more possibly. I don't know.
It happens all the time. And, you know, in your story, you were talking about when you first came up with this idea, you talk to people about it and they're like, nah, but no one would do that. No one would send texts. And now look at the way the world works. It's like, people are, it's almost the opposite. It's like, don't call me. Why would you call? That's gross. Why would you call me? Send me a text, right?
Yeah.
So how do we overcome those assumptions?
You stumped me. it's tough. I think we need to be proactive around some of them. So take for example, I mean, you being a proactive ethical hacker, right? I had to think in advance. Now, keep in mind, I came from the pharmaceutical world, so we were highly regulated. So I was always kind of thinking in that way anyway. But I thought about, well, what if I made, well, now Catchwords, right? What if I make it like a do-it-yourself platform? You go online, you upload any PDF, somebody could text whatever word, it could be any word, right? What if I could do that? And basically I could get millions of people just flooding into this, most of them probably not using it well or using it at all. And I'm like running in buku bucks, right? But I wasn't interested in that. I was interested in the results. But in addition to that, I thought from a regulatory perspective, I don't want my short code, to get shut down because somebody misused it. Right. So I had to make assumptions on the flip side. I'm not sure it's really the direction you're going, but I had to make assumptions of like, what could people possibly do if I put it out there, just like let them play with it. Right. And the impact that it would have on what people's initial impressions of the technology would be as a result of people misusing it, right? But then also as a result of not using it correctly, then they're going to think that it sucks. So take, for example, I'll say Company X, which was a pretty big company, interacting with chiropractors at the time. I was trying to offer some strategy around it. And they're like, yeah, we know what to offer our chiropractors. And let's say it was something that they wanted to offer chiropractors, but chiropractors could give two craps about it. So they present this catchword at an exhibit, and zero people texted it. And their response was, oh, you see, mobile market chiropractors don't text. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah, you know. Wow. So I had to kind of work around a lot of that stuff. People assuming like, oh, you know, I don't need that, all the extra fluff on the strategy, assuming chiropractors don't text and stuff. And how I approached it is that I had to kind of offer a package solution. Like I do not, every catchword has to be created by our agency. It allows us to protect our clients from doing the wrong thing, from over connecting, you know, with their subscriber base. We have less than 2% of people unsubscribe, which is crazy, but that's because we really respect the fact that we have the ability to be in somebody's text inbox, right? But most people wouldn't do that. So it's hard because you have to put them in a box and like control them a little bit, but it's all for the best of the long term of the system as well.
There's a little bit of hacker in you there. You're testing assumptions and seeing what people might do wrong with it. I like it.
Dude, there's actually lots of hacker. When I was like, oh, wait a second, you could be an ethical hacker. I always said like, if I had evil in me, I'd be very, very dangerous. Like I can't, I would rather use it for good, but the things that I think of And so I'm always poking holes in things. I would prefer to poke holes in things in advance than have our clients, the subscribers kind of experience it. Right. So it's good to kind of look at that.
I mean, that's the entire premise of my business model.
Yeah. But I mean, tell me, like, people, not everybody responds to that well. Like in the corporate world, it was like, would you stop finding holes in our plan? And I'm like, but I'm doing it with good intention.
Right. The holes exist.
Yeah. Like if it's not us, it's going to be somebody else, you know? Right. When you're in the pharmaceutical world and talking about, you know, patient wellness, patient lives in some cases, right? You need to assume that they will do some funky things. You could imagine, like if they don't know, and it could be really, really harmful to them.
It's interesting hearing you talk about some of the maybe cognitive biases that exist. You know, when you're telling that story about the chiropractors, there's definitely some confirmation bias going on there, right? They think that chiropractors don't text, so they're looking for validation to support that assumption, even if they don't believe that, they don't realize that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I like your response to that, which was, okay, well, we have to take more control in order to make sure the customer succeeds. And it made me think of this this thing that a mentor of mine told me early in my career. He said, the customer is not always right. But the customer is always the customer. Yeah. And what he meant by that, and I thought that was really powerful. He meant that like, it's up to us to help the customer do what's best for them, even when the customer doesn't realize what's best for them. And it sounds like you figured that out in your business model, which is, hey, we can't just let this be free reign because they'll make the wrong decisions, not because they're stupid or malicious or malintent, but they just don't know what we know. And so let's help them succeed. Is that a correct read on the way you've thought about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that sometimes it's difficult to help a client or to keep a client from doing something that is going to ultimately not be a positive. I don't want to say hurt necessarily, but not going to work as well possibly. And in some cases it could hurt, their campaign. And I, while you were speaking, the word that popped out to me was empathy. Right. So I think it's really important to understand your client's perspective. Right. I think when, if I may, being a marketer at heart, but working with a lot of tech folks, and thankfully I'm technophilic. Right. So I dig it and I seek to understand. But in the corporate world, there was a lot of static between IT and tech and marketing, right? Because they never feel like they understand each other, right? And so on both sides, like marketers have to be more empathetic about what are the issues the tech team is looking at, what's important, what's their role. And then tech needs to be empathetic, especially in marketing. It's a lot more passionate, right? There's a lot more heart. And when you're dealing with entrepreneurs, as I do, there's a lot of heart. So when you're trying to tell them that they may be going a little astray in the sense of, let's say, being too salesy, like for me, using a catchword is about extending the value of your appearance. Okay. It's not about saying, hey, text this for 20% discount. There are other platforms that you could do yourself and whatever, and you could get unsubscribed very quickly as well. Right. But our purpose is to say you're providing value and there's never enough time. Even if you have a 90-minute workshop or a full-day workshop, there's never enough time to share all of your expertise. So you can utilize a catchword to actually extend the value and help your audience get to know, like, and trust you better. And so sometimes I have clients that want to use it in a promotional way. Immediately, they're like, my catchword is my company name. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, in most cases, like 99% of cases, your catchword really shouldn't be your company name, because that automatically makes people feel that it's promotional in nature. And that's not the intention. So I think it's hard work to help guide and be an advisor. But I also think we each need to understand the other person's perspective, and maybe even ask, like, what's important to you?
100%. Yeah, I'm totally with you on the power and value of empathy. And to me, it's really interesting that this is a podcast about a very technical scientific field, and we bring in, all kinds of people with really interesting perspectives. And yet so many of the topics are these really softer subjects, right?
Yeah.
And empathy. And like, who's thinking like, oh, tech done different, I'm definitely going to go learn about empathy. But you're so 100% spot on. And I was, as you were talking about what a catchword should be, in my mind, I was thinking about it like, oh, of course, the catchword is going to be someone's like company name or even the speaker's name. But if I'm in the audience, I would be way more interested in a catchword that speaks to a problem I have. Like the one you showed was leads. It's like, yeah, people want leads, or I don't know, like whatever the problem is that you're speaking about, like that's the catchword. And someone says, that's what I want. I don't want your marketing junk. I want my problem solved.
Right. Right. And if I may, just strategically, right. When we teach people about that transitional process and making it feel educational, right. If my talk was focused on lead generation and trying to optimize leads from all of your appearances, then the catchword leads makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. To text leads to 411321. It's a natural transition. I'll say, I wish I had enough time, but I have this really great guide on how to transform your talk into lead generating machine. So it goes into like the whole vibe of what we're talking about. So now it's like, yeah, that's what I'm interested in, leads. Let me text leads. Now, what I'm also finding is that there's a subset of audience of my ideal prospects that are not necessarily as interested in the word leads, but they're interested in an extending impact, mm-hmm. right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my team and we're going to tweak this a little bit. And for those audiences, when I know that I'm probably going to be in front of an audience that isn't going to be as like hard marketing, like leads oriented, I'm going to offer a catchword that fits into our discussion, right? And I'll say text impact. Now, don't text impact now. Well, I mean, if you do, maybe by the time this goes live, it will be live, right? But that's like the thought process of how you use the technology to serve your audience, that you really have to think about how you're going to interweave this into whatever it is that you're doing. It could be a podcast interview. It could be an actual like summit talk or something, mm-hmm. right? But that's just an example of what we would go through and saying, but the tech is the same. The tech is absolutely the same. It's just, what is it that you're going to use it for? And you're going to have a much, I can guarantee that if I were to do like a A-B split test or whatever, that for more soft, empathetic, like impact oriented people, they would text impact over leads more.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Starting from the standpoint of what does the audience need to hear? What outcomes do they need? And then ultimately deliver that to them. And I mean, fundamentally, that's what any of us who are in literally any role, is it going to say any of us who are in technology or security, but I'm like, no, probably anything. What we all need to do is we need to understand the person on the other side of the transaction. I don't mean a sales transaction, but the conversation, whatever it is we're doing, how do we make that person succeed? And so how have you figured that out? What's your tip for figuring out what the person, and you've seemed to figure out how to do it well. Mm-hmm. How do you figure out what the person you're speaking to or group you're speaking to needs from you?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is really doing some research, right? I think there a lot of times folks, they book appearances, they book speaking engagements, and they don't take it literally 15 minutes to just put yourself in the perspective of the audience. Like, who's in the audience and what is it that they want to listen to hear about? And then you make some minor tweaks. I mean, you have to do the foundational strategy work. So it's like you have your core strategy, your core messaging. And then every time you appear, you do that little bit of work that helps you, you know, kind of tweak in one direction or the other, and it can make a big difference. But I feel like maybe as a performer, so I perform in musical theater as well, hence the using of my hands and stuff, right? La, la, la. But the thing is, you see, when I perform, I'm always thinking about how the audience is going to see what I'm doing, right? And how they're going to feel and process what I'm doing. And my objective is to deliver them a reaction. That's what they're paying a ticket for, right? So it's not about like taking something and internalizing and being like, wow, I was like really good at that dramatic part, but like nobody saw me because my face was in the wrong direction. And you know, like you have to be aware of all of those things. And so if as a speaker, you always consider the position of the audience and their perspective, you're going to perform better in general. And in this case, performing better means delivering greater impact. It's literally whether you're in a meeting and you're aware, it's a really important meeting and you're aware of what your body is doing, your body language, what your voice is like, right? And then the same thing goes on to appearances and presentations and stuff like that. So
Totally.
I help people with that as well. Interestingly enough, they think they bought into some tech and strategy, and then meanwhile, I'm giving them some acting classes.
There you go. I mean, what's interesting too is all of that advice that you just provided, you framed it around whether it's someone on a stage or just giving a presentation internally to your company, but really that advice applies to almost any interpersonal communication, right? Yep. Understand, doing your research, understanding where they're coming from, even if you have the same message from, you know, whether you're in sales and you're communicating to one company to another, or you're the security evangelist who's like, guys, we got to do multi-factor, you know, whatever it is. Understanding a little bit who you're talking to is the path to success, is what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. You just reminded me of activism, right? So You have folks that really like rattle the cages and they're like, yeah, but it takes those it takes a different type of person to bridge the gap, right? They make the noise, and then to actually make the change, you need somebody that is going to understand the perspective of the other side, right? And they're not going to be like in a meeting screaming in their face about what's important, right? They're going to ratchet it down, even though they are representing the activists, right? And so I guess there's some things that we could be super duper passionate about. And we realize like we just want to be the evangelist, the activist, you know, for that particular thing and wave the flag. But we have to realize that to get things done, we really need to understand how that other person is going to perceive it.
You know, that really resonates with me personally, in that when I was earlier in my security career and I was trying to determine, you know, what fulfills me and makes me happiest and where is there a need that I can best fill, I identified something very similar to what you've just described, which was I saw on one hand very, very technical people really understanding at a code level the issues. And that's on the other hand, business people really deeply understanding the business impact. But often those two audiences had difficulty communicating to each other. And I'm like, I can solve that problem. I know how to speak to both of those and serve as sort of this translator. So I sort of made, I said, that's where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
Now, is your advice that every organization needs someone like that? Or are you advocating more that there needs to be some sort of translation layer? Doesn't necessarily need to be a person, but that these two sides of an equation need to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah. So I think there needs to be awareness on both sides, but honestly, I do believe that there should be a translator. There should be. I'm going to take you way back to 1997. All right. But I literally built like the first website for this, you know, super humongous pharmaceutical company. And then throughout that year, I just loved going to tech conferences, and I would learn about how other industries were utilizing technology, texting, social media, the internet, right? Website. And I, at one point, I had a discussion with one of the VPs at the time, and he said, so how's it going? Because I came in as a postdoctoral fellow, by the way. So I had a little bit more access to the higher ups, just because they were kind of curious as to how I was appreciating the program. And so I said, well, actually, what I think is an opportunity, this is in 97, what I think is an opportunity is to have somebody learn about how other industries are using technology and to translate it into the pharmaceutical world, because pharmaceuticals tend to be super conservative, right? And they always think like, you don't understand how we do things, right? Mm-hmm. And so then they don't do things. And at that point, I was a healthcare professional. So my perspective was, but if we learn, then we'll be able to really figure out how we can like help patients using this technology instead of being afraid of it. And he said, you're hired. And I was like, what do you mean? My boss is going to be really pissed off, right? But the point was that he acknowledged, like, of course, they could learn about it and such, but to have somebody that was dedicated in trying to learn one side, know the other, and figure out how to translate it, it was going to expedite the progress, right? And so that was my first experience in actually offering that. And then I became the first internet strategist, I called myself, for that pharmaceutical company. And now pharmaceutical companies have multi-channel marketing departments, they call them. And they are the translators between marketers who need to know about technical and digital marketing, but that's not their expertise. They're about the strategy, right? And then these other people really learn about the tech and they're the bridge. And so I see that as a very successful example of that. But when you have those, when you have that built-in static, it's going to happen all the time. I think it's more valuable to have somebody that is dedicated to bridging the gap, and it's just going to expedite your progress even more, instead of hoping that the people on both sides kind of got the message and did the training and whatever, right? So that would be my suggestion if you want to move faster.
I love it. I support it. I'm with you. So we're coming out of time here. Yeah. I'll ask you one last question, uh-huh. and that's to pull out your crystal ball. And in the world, in your worldview, as it comes to communication technology, what's coming next? What's around the corner that people should be thinking about?
Well, I think what we need to be really aware of, and I feel like I'm ahead of the game here, is really respecting people's mobile phones, right? I'm super sensitive about that. I already see people saying, yeah, I get 99% open rate, you know, on my text message, which you can't actually assess without doing some sort of other study, but you can't measure that technically, open rates on a text message, not yet. But now people are getting inundated with a lot of spam on texting. Mm-hmm. And that was a really, just a wonderful opportunity to have really respectable like conversation. And if we don't respect it, we're going to lose a really, really powerful channel. Like because right now texting doesn't allow you to really put things in folders and such like email does, right? But what happens is people are just getting overwhelmed with email and not reading it. But luckily texting, because it is telecommunications, it's actually regulated way, way more stringently than email. But I think we need to look at that in the future. And people are just like, they salivate at the opportunity to text about like, you know, bar specials or whatever. And they don't realize that they're just going to just clog the airways, and there are a lot of other priority important things to do. So hopefully, I mean, I don't know, maybe the pricing of accessing the texting channel can be higher and such, but it takes people to actually want to respect the channel, right? Right. You could bastardize the channel, make it super cheap, and then ruin it for everybody. So I ask of those who are looking into this channel to be super duper respectful of it, because it is powerful. But if we think of how we want to be interacted with from a texting perspective, and you just keep that in mind, maybe it'll keep you from doing some stupid things.
with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
I love that what a great way to end this episode, that your forecast of the future is more respect for the channel of texting. So that is a great one to end
on. That's more like my hope. Maybe I can like whip people in shape and affect that.
I don't like spam text messages. So
yeah.
Well, Dr. Wanda, thank you so much for spending some time with us here today. I think you really have helped people think differently.
Cool. I love it. My pleasure. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I wasn't sure what to expect. I hope that I served your audience, because I really look forward to continuing to be of value and of service.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you for being here. And thank everyone for listening. If you want to learn more about the show or apply to be a guest on the podcast yourself, just go to tedharrington.com/podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.